I'm great, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. Sober today by the grace of God and the program of AA and my writer friend over here. Right on. You're not Stephen King yet, but, you know, keep going. Although he's a very crazy guy. I don't think I'd want you to be like Stephen King. But anyway, I'm wearing my my badge from the L.A. convention last weekend. I got sober in L.A. And I went back there after 6 years. I haven't been there in a long time. And this was at the Burbank Hilton in right near the airport. I drove down. And I walked up to the front door to register, and there were two alcoholics there. Whitney! I mean, and it didn't stop the whole time I was there. It was like coming home. It was wonderful. And I stayed the whole weekend and heard the speakers and was blessed. I stayed with a girlfriend of mine in her mobile home in Mission Hills. And I drove and I was calm and I was happy and I was joyous. I mean, how do we get here from there? How do I get here from there? No way. It is because of the mercy of a loving God. I give him all the credit, and Alcoholics Anonymous all the credit. My friends are here tonight from my meetings. I love them so much. I want to thank Marge. I want to thank Marge for taking us out to dinner. There were 20 of us met over at Denny's. We had a great time. And I want to thank you guys, the survivor group, for calling me and asking me to speak. I am a survivor, that's for sure. And I come from show business, so I'm hip, slick, and cool. You know. And I was never hip, slick, and cool until I started drinking, though. Before that, I was a basket case. Alcohol was my medicine. I couldn't have lived without alcohol when I was young. I was reading. I wrote a book when I was 15 years sober. And it's my story, my autobiography, and my drunk along and my sobriety and everything. And I couldn't write it till I turned 15. I could not face the demons until I turned 15. I just could not look at myself enough to write it down. So today I thought, you know, my life is so good. I live up in Yosemite Lakes, have a 30-acre ranch up there, which I bought from money that I have worked on since I've been sober. God has blessed me with a career that I could do even after the show was over. And I thought, you know, I should read my book. I haven't read it in a long time. And I thought, I'll sit down and read it and see if I can get through it without crying. I could not. That person in here is not me today. That is a person who was lost, empty, alone, afraid, determined to be a star, scared, just all those things. And yet I worked myself to the bone. I was compulsive obsessive. Just like you. I would get up and go to dance class and singing class and all that stuff in New York. I came out of New York also. Although I was born in Michigan, went to Chicago to sing in a band, worked with Billie Holiday, Buddy Rich, a lot of wonderful people. But I drank a lot. I drank a lot. So I ended up in New York. That was a geographic for me. But I auditioned for a show there and got a show. And had to go on the stage without alcohol. It was very hard for me to sing or do any work without alcohol. And so I got on the stage in New York and worked with a fellow named Jack Albertson. You probably know who he is. He's an actor that did worked with Freddie Prinze, did that series. Great guy. And he was understudying with me in a show called Hot Banana with Bill Stewart. God, all these things. This is in 1950. And I went back there and got this show, and I would show up for work for understudy practice, and he would wiggle his nose and he'd say, "You been drinking again?" I said, "No, I haven't had a drink today." He said, "Well, you drank last night because I smell it." And, you know, he caught on right away. He called me an alcoholic before I even knew what the word meant. I mean, a long time ago. But I smelled like an alcoholic. You know, we don't metabolize it like normal people. We really don't. And so I worked with him and worked with Phil Silvers. I was Miss Holland. I had windmills on my boots. And Miss Holland costume, and I would prance across the stage, and Phil Silvers would spin that propeller, the windmill, and I would stop, you know, and we'd have a joke or two together. And then I'd prance off again. I'll tell you, I had a great time, just a great time. I did lots of shows in New York and in Chicago and drank through the whole thing. I had my first drink when I was 13, and once I started, I never stopped. Not till I got here, and I didn't get sober till I was 51. So I drank a long time. It's a miracle I'm alive. And I know that I had to go through what I had to go through, because when I came in here and saw how young you all were, you know, I thought, what am I doing here? You were like kids in L.A. They look like, you all look like kids in the meeting. And, but anyway, I did the shows. I tried to excel. I got understudy jobs and did the stars role, but I was in fear constantly. I had self-centered fear. Fear that I wasn't going to get this part, or fear that I was going to lose this job. It was like the school of hard knocks, no college for me. It was right on the stage. I had to get up there and do it, right straight out. And I was just scared all the time, except when I was performing. When I was performing and I had the mask on and I was somebody else, I was okay. So after New York, I went back to L.A. Well, first of all, I fell in love with the drummer in the pit. Very cute guy, looked like Gene Krupa. And, you know, I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it, and I nabbed him, and he told me he didn't even like girls. And I said, "Oh, I'll change your mind, honey." You know, us women. And I said to him, you know, not as a lover, but as a hostage. You know, that's what we do. We take hostages. And I was bound determined I was going to get him, turn him into a loving husband, marry him, have kids, come to the coast, and I had it all planned. You know, I can't go out on a date today without planning the whole thing. You know, I'm already married to the guy and in a house. Well, it'll be all right if he lives in one house and I live in the other. Then it'll work. But anyway, this guy was great. He was darling. And I started living with him right away on the road. We were on the road with the show. The show was Pajama Game. Not Top Banana, by this time it was Pajama Game. And we were on the road, and he was in the pit, and I was on the stage, and he was doing things, and we just had a great life, and we were living together, and I thought it was the best thing. But I drank. I drank all the time. When I got off the stage, I drank, and he didn't like it. So I started hiding it. And of course, the more I hid it, the more fun it was to drink. You know, if I can sneak it, I'm happier. So I began to lead the double life of Jekyll and Hyde, going out on him and staying married to him at the same time. Came out to L.A., started to do film, did Three Penny Opera out here, played Lucy Brown, was the most fun I ever had, and fell off the stage twice. Got good reviews, but, you know, I was going down, drinking, taking pills by this time to keep the weight off. Dr. Feelgood gave me some Benzedrine. So I was taking Benzedrine and Dexedrine and a few things. B got me up there and did the show. And after the show, I would crash from the excitement and all of the stuff. And then I would have to sleep in the parking lot on the way home. I couldn't drive all the way to the valley because I couldn't see and I couldn't stay awake. And I was high on the pills. The pills wore off. I crashed. I went right down, and then I was drinking. I had a bottle backstage. So I got home, and by this time I had divorced my first husband, and I read in my book today where I take hostages and then I sabotage myself. Sabotage the relationship. Sabotage the good time. Pick at it, critical conscience, never satisfied, chronic malcontent, just pick, 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 pick. until I sabotaged the whole relationship. And my kids, I had two kids by this time, and I threw their father out against my own will. I did not want to do this. I couldn't help myself. I did it anyway. It was like I was crazed at that time. And this was only 1965. I didn't get sober till 81. April 13th, 1981 is my sobriety date. 65, I got a show. That's when I got the Star Trek show. And that's when I was elevated to a regular on a show that nobody thought would ever become successful. And we worked ourselves to the bone. We were the first crew. We were the original crew. And we set the stage for the whole rest of everything. So we worked very hard. I was there all the time. I was taking speed and drinking at night. I'd drink to come down, take the speed to come up. I became obsessed. That's such a good word. Obsessed with doing the right job and obsessed with getting thin. And I started to get thin until I had anorexia. I mean, I was going to be the best on that show no matter what. About six shows in, the producer asked me to go to his office and talk about my part. Where have we heard that before, ladies? But I had had a couple of drinks. In fact, I'd had several drinks. It was a Friday night party, a rap party, and I didn't get it. Over my head. I went with the guy. He had it all planned. I couldn't get out of his office. I was attacked in his office. And I resisted him so much. I mean, I did everything I could. Finally, after a couple of hours, I just said, okay, have at it. I don't care what you do. Well, he couldn't perform. We had a little Viagra, you know. I'd have been out of there in 10 minutes. But this guy could not perform, and he told me he was going to kill me because I didn't excite him. He blamed it on me. And it's funny now, but let me tell you, I was in such a bind. This guy was a producer, and this was my job. And what am I to do? I can't satisfy this guy. I can't make him happy. What am I going to... It was horrendous. And what happened was, I finally got out. He locked the doors on me, but I got out. And I went to Leonard Nimoy's house. I was broken. I was disheveled. I was scared. I was drunk. Not drunk. I was sober, but I had been drinking. You know how that is. And I got there, and Leonard let me in, and I told him the whole story, and he said, keep your mouth shut. Don't tell anybody. This was before there were any laws against sexual harassment. This was in the 60s, way back. I kept it to myself. I stuffed it. I stuffed it. It kept coming up, and I stuffed it. And the more it would come up, the more I would stuff it, the sicker I got. I got so sick from this secret. I couldn't tell my husband, I couldn't tell anybody, and eventually, within a week, I was written out, fired from the show. And that set going for me, a hell-bent thing to self-destruct. I wanted to kill myself, as you know. You all know, I'm not telling you anything that you haven't felt yourself. I couldn't take the pain, psychic pain. I couldn't drink it. I couldn't do anything to get rid of it. My poor husband. It was a mess. And I went on like that until I kicked this guy out. And I couldn't get happy anywhere. And then I began to think, if I looked better, maybe I could get another job. Maybe I could go on with my career. So I started with a plastic surgery. And I like to tell you that my tits are 30, my face is 40, and my ass is 51. If the outside looked good, I'd be all right. Don't you know that? Don't you guys know that? The better we look, the better we feel. Well, hello. I didn't know it was an inside job. Then I got on a roller skating kick. After I threw the last husband out, I got on a roller skating kick and started to wear bikinis because I looked so cute, don't you know? I had to show everybody how cute I was. So my kids finally got to the point, they were roller skating in Venice with me where the debris meets the sea. And they said to me, Mother, can't you wear something else to skate in? Do you have to wear that skimpy bikini? This is a kid talking to their mother. Now this kid was, what, 15, 16, 17 years old. And there I was, trying to stay young, don't you know? Scared to death I'm going to lose my youth. Scared I'm going to lose my figure. Scared I'm going to do this, I'm not going to get that. And I can't get this, I'm going to lose that. Self-centered fear. And I finally did that until everything started to go down in my life, just like what happened to you. Everything went all the way down. And I felt like I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to go. I was wearing a Bo Derek wig. And I remember going into my first meeting, they would call me, hey, old ropehead. They called me because I had to be somebody else other than who I was. So I had a Farrah Fawcett look, and I had a Bo Derek look, and I just had a sleeve look. I had a slut look. I had it all. I had every look for every bar in town. Wherever I go, I had the look. And I got what I wanted until I didn't want it anymore. I screwed myself to death. Sexual addiction. I don't know if any of you know what that is, but let me tell you. In AA, I have a feeling a lot of you know what that is. I eventually had to go to a program for that addiction. In fact, I've been to all the programs for all the addictions, including Al-Anon. Oh, dear me. But I love Al-Anon. I am a double winner also. My husband just died a couple years ago from this disease. I had to go right the minute I got sober. I had to go to Al-Anon. Anyway, I got into this business and got crazy and hooked up with a lawyer in downtown L.A. who was in the Pacific Group. And he was going to the Pacific Group meetings and taking cakes and drinking with me on the side. Hip, slick, and cool. I said, how come you go to that AA and take cakes in there and drink with me on the side? Isn't that wrong? He says, oh, they do it their way and I do it my way. He's a big-time lawyer, let me tell you. His wife used to call me and tell me to leave him alone. I was killing him. She didn't know he was the one that was killing me. I mean, we were killing each other, let's face it. We had debauches. We had group sex, we killed each other, is what we did. And finally, I got to the point where I couldn't do it anymore. And I went into the office downtown and got down on my hands and knees in front of Harvey P. Harvey P. runs the AA Central office in Los Angeles downtown. Harvey P., one of Clancy's babies. He was living in the place where Clancy works down at the Midnight Mission. And I was going with this guy in our office now, and Clancy was in the office, and I got down on my hands and knees in front of him one day and said, you know what, I'm through. I can't do it anymore. I'm so sick and tired of being sick and tired. He said, good. He said, maybe you'll come to a meeting with me now. And I just, you know, ooh, a meeting, ooh, you know. I said, well, all right. I was desperate. I had to do something. He says, okay, you'll put a pin in your shirt, you know. And I mean, weren't they beautiful? Weren't you supposed to see them? I mean, weren't you, you know, all of that I had going. And I had spandex pants on, and they made me put a sweater around the spandex pants. And I went to my first AA meeting. And the first meeting I went to, I wasn't aware of what you were all about. And you were too straight. And I ran. The next meeting I went to, I stayed a little longer. The third meeting I went to, what had happened before that is my dad died. I was raising Great Danes. They died. my husband looked at me in the mirror and said, "You have had a facelift and a boob job, and you are ugly. You look terrible." My face was all puffy. My wires were exposed. You know that one, the wires, the red veins in your face. And I looked in the mirror, and I said, "Won't you put your arms around me and just hold me?" And he said, "You're despicable. I don't want anything to do with you." And that sent me to my knees. I went to the next meeting. It was Camden. It was April 13th, 1981. It was Camden on Rodeo Drive and Beverly in L.A. And I'll remember it. I've got goosebumps all over me. I walked up to that meeting, and I saw these good-looking guys coming in off the street. And I thought, "Hey, Whitney, wake up." And I walked through the doors, and there were producers, directors, actors, writers, lots of showbiz people, about 300 in there, all laughing, talking, carrying on, smiling, smelling good. I noticed in Denny's tonight, as I hugged each one of you, you smell so good. And see, in the bars where I was, it stunk. Was rotten in there. And when I got to AA and could smell that joy, I said, "Yes." And you know, God dropped the veil from my eyes. And I came in that meeting, and when they asked for newcomers, anybody under 30 days sober, people were putting up their hands and saying, "I'm John, I'm an alcoholic. I'm Janet, I'm an alcoholic." And I said, "I'm Whitney, and I don't know what I am." And you just erupted into applause. And applause has been what I've been looking for all my life, honey. Applause. Applause. Woo-hoo-hoo! Applause! Yes, yes! Come on! And I went, "Whoa! Applause!" And I started to smile, and I've been here ever since. I never left. I heard you, I smelled you, I saw you, and I wanted you right away. I wanted what you had. The speaker got up on the stage, and she was talking about dancing in the bars with a rose in her teeth. Molly B. I'll never forget it. I thought, yes, I heard the truth for the first time. I thought the scripts were true. I thought the stories on Broadway were truth. No, the truth is in AA. The truth of what we really feel like, and how bottomed, how far down we go, and how good we feel when we get sober. That's what I heard. Yeah. And I sat there across the table, and I went, "I want this. I want this." And at the end of the meeting, you all got up and held hands, and I thought, "What's this? You know, coming for where I'm coming from, I didn't know what it was." We held hands, and guess what we did? We said the Lord's Prayer. I had not said the Lord's Prayer since I was 14. And I bowed my head. "Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in heaven as it is on earth." And I looked up, and I felt the connection. I felt the connection, and I looked up, and I went, "Wow! You mean you're really there?" I had become an atheist, a non-believer. And I couldn't believe that I felt this thing. And I have not had the urge to drink or use ever since that day. April 13th, 1981. By the grace of God. By the grace of God. Because I couldn't do without alcohol. I couldn't do without getting high. I didn't want to be sober. Who wants to be sober? Yuck. But I'd had enough of the other. See, I was finished. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. P-A-I-D. I paid my dues. And when I got what you had for me, you couldn't get me away from this place. I became so gung-ho, people ran the other way. I did a 180 so straight with the smiles and everything. I come in the room and they say, cheer up, Whitney, cheer up. I mean, I was so happy not to have to go back to the bars, not to have to go back to the degradation that I had put myself in. And I got a chance to get a sponsor and a home group and a sobriety date. That's the three things we got to have. I had Camden as a home group, Patty Hicks as a sponsor, and April 13th, 1981. And I started to go to meetings. I was so scared that there weren't, I had to wait a whole week to go to another meeting. They said, oh no, you can go to three a day, Whitney. We suggest you go to three a day. So I started going. I had been fired from my job downtown. Well, the guy, I got to tell you about the lawyer. When I got sober, I had to stop compromising myself. That's what my sponsor said. Don't service him anymore. What an order. So I went down to the office and I said, guess what? I got sober. And I can't do it anymore. He said, that's the trouble with all you girls. You get sober and you don't want to do it anymore. So I kept going to meetings. And his wife kept calling me and I kept saying to her, hey honey, butt out, I am sober. I am sorry for what I have done to your husband. Please forgive me. Honest to God, I said that to her. I don't want any harm to come to him, but I'm out of here and I'm not with him or near him anymore. I am sober. And you know what? He died right after that. Now, I know that it wasn't my fault that he died because I wasn't with him. Thank goodness. Because I'd have damn well blamed myself if he'd had a heart attack or something. Anyway, I used to take his inventory a lot. And my sponsor said, I'm going to give you a clue. You know, you may think he is terrible, but we attract what we are, Whitney. We attract what we are. I said, oh, okay. And she said, I suggest that you change the way you dress. You are here to save your ass, not show everybody how cute it is. I had to give up all my power, and you know what that power is, don't you? I won't say it out loud. That's my favorite word. Had to give it up. See, all the ladies are laughing. They know what it is. Had to give it up. Couldn't do it anymore. What am I going to put in its place? Meetings. Meetings and more meetings. My sponsor was great. She took me right into Sybil Brand after I got 6 months, and I had a panel with her in Sybil Brand. That was great. Then I went to, from Sybil Brand, when I came up here, I went to Chowchilla. So I live up in the hills, so I was able to go to Chowchilla. But she got me into service. She was a great, great lady, and she spoke a lot. The only problem she had was she smoked four packs of cigarettes a day. And I had to give up my smoking too, because after I stopped drinking, I smoked twice as much as I did when I was drinking. And what happened was, I couldn't breathe. So what happened to her, she got cancer and she died. She left me. And I had such a resentment that my sponsor would smoke herself to death. Doggone her. I mean, can you imagine me getting angry at her because she died? But I'll tell you, I quit smoking. And that's what stopped me from, again, killing myself, because I couldn't breathe. I have emphysema today. But all of these things that were given to me were gifts, because I was an adopted child. At 7 years old, my mother told me, what time is this meeting over? 8:30, thank you. Now I stop at 20 after? Is that what time you want me to stop? 8:30. What an order. Anyway, she got sick and died, and I had to give it up. Well, now, I have never been without alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, or sex, or sex, not food yet. Food was the next thing. I had to give up those four things and devote myself totally to the program. I did a lot of service. I sponsored. I wasn't done with my steps yet. She told me to give a card. When I was 6 months sober, she told me I had to sponsor a newcomer right away. 6 months sober, if you don't sponsor a newcomer, you can't stay sober. This is called hardcore AA. And so I had to pick some poor person. I thought I was going to give them the disease. And she said, no, you got 6 months. They got no, you sponsor them. So I sponsored a heroin addict. Well, it was the girl who came up. Her name was Candy. She was a blonde girl, and she was hooked on heroin. She drank a lot, too, but she was a heroin addict. And I had to go over and get her out of the tub. She was in the tub. I had to get her out of the tub to go to the meeting. She couldn't get out of the tub. She was wasted. And I worked with her every day and took her to meetings, and she kept me sober. And I kept doing the steps and doing my inventory. Instead of taking yours, I started to take my own. Then I started to get ashamed of what I did. And when I got ashamed of what I did, I was able to forgive anybody who had done anything to me because I saw what a thought I was and how bad I was. So each time I do a step, I get another sponsee. And I keep doing the steps ahead of sponsoring. And that's how I stayed sober, by working with my sponsor and bringing these girls, carrying these girls. I didn't carry them, no. But I was with them. I was dedicated to them. And I was in my first year of sobriety. And I was going to Sybil Brand, and I was doing all that stuff. And let me tell you guys, if alcohol got me high, I couldn't have been any higher than I was on AA and God. God and AA brought me right up to where I've wanted to be all my life, and I'm still there. I am still there. And I will be 23 in 2 months, and I'm still there. Hallelujah! Then I just kept working and working, doing my steps. And when I got sober, Chuck C was the main speaker, and I was doing a 10-minute thing with him. When I took my one-year chip and my cake, one of the guys was a floral arranger on Rodeo Drive. You know, the Gucci meetings that I went to, women in mink coats and all kind of stuff down there. I mean, these people go all out. They wear their sobriety. And this guy had a bouquet of roses and brought it up on the podium to me when I took my cake. I felt like I'd win an Olympic medal. That's what they gave me, what do you call it? Chip, thank you. A chip. And I thought I had won the lottery or won, you know, I felt total, like an Academy Award. I felt like I was absolutely on top. Now, how could I get that feeling just by being a sober drunk? How could I get that? It must be something that you had, and it must be a plan that God had. And that's what I did. Just year after year, I went back into my career. I went to England. I went on the ship with a big book under my arm on the airplane and 12-stepped everybody snorting cocaine in the John. I 12-stepped everybody on the damn plane. We were on it 17 hours. And I was so scared I was going to drink that I just 12-stepped everybody. I mean, what else? I had the book. I carried it around. I mean, I was what they call a zealot, you know. Anyway, I stayed sober, went to meetings in England, went to meetings in Australia, went to meetings in Korea, where they spoke only Korean, went to meetings in Israel, and in a bomb shelter in Tel Aviv. And when Saddam Hussein was lobbing those Scud missiles at Israel, I said, don't you do it to the meeting! Don't hit the meeting! I didn't want him to take the meeting out. There was only one meeting in Tel Aviv in a bomb shelter. And I went in there, and I was there for 12 days. And that's where I met the Lord in the Garden of Gethsemane. I had a wild experience over there. And I saw the Lord in the Garden of Gethsemane like a little picture in the Bible when I was a kid. And I got born again over there. My son was in Hebrew school, so I went over for his bar mitzvah. Isn't that interesting? So when I saw the Lord, I said, but I'm Jewish. He said, well, so am I. I was 2.5 years old. And I got the Lord. My son Jonathan was there. He was drinking and using. A year later, I got a chance to 12-step my son in New York. He was suicidal. He was going to kill himself. I said, honey, don't show yourself yet. I'm 3 years, just 3 years sober, and you got to read the big book before you do take any action. And so I got him the big book, and he read the first 164 pages and called me 2 weeks later and said he was talking to me for the first time without hating me. without hating his drunken mother. Isn't that a miracle? Today, that boy is clean, sober, has a jazz band, plays in church, plays great horn, and he is totally ACA. Adult child of an alcoholic. He doesn't drink or use. He's raising my grandchildren. And he loves God. And that's a direct result of everything that you taught me. Everything. So you see, we never know who we're going to touch. We just never know. I got a chance at about 3 years sober to 12-step one of the main characters from the show. I can't tell you who it is because I can't break his anonymity. But he shared at a meeting in Beverly Hills. And I was the second speaker. He was the first speaker. He was about maybe 6 years sober. He said, Whitney, Grace Lee Whitney, was the first person I ever heard who said she was an alcoholic, but she didn't drink. And so we're sober drunks. And, you know, we're never alcoholics till we get sober. We drink ourselves to death, and we're not alcoholics. The minute we come in the program and say we don't want to drink anymore, we're alcoholics. What sense does that make? You know what I mean? It's crazy. But, you know, everything is opposite here. Seeing is not believing. Believing is seeing, Mike. Believing is seeing. See, that's what happened to me. Take the action, the feeling will follow. You don't want to take that newcomer, you don't want to do this, you don't want to show up and make the coffee. Take the action, you will feel good after. Feelings follow the action. So I did all that. I sponsored, I made amends. My sponsor died and I never forgave her, but I got another sponsor. She was head of Friendly House. She was wonderful. She was 80 years old. She was 30 years sober. And she ran Friendly House. And Carol Burnett was on the board down there, and she would come down. You know, her kid was one of us. Her daughter was one of us. And Carol Burnett came. She was on the board down at Friendly House. And I had this sponsor, and she made me be of service down there, made me. See, I didn't really want to do it. I had too much else to do. You know how that is. But she said, you will do it. So I did it, and I came to love it. Came to love it. And that's the way my sobriety has been. I have taken the actions that I don't want to. I am obedient. I don't want to be obedient. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it with who I want to do it with. Can't do it anymore. I am obedient because I am too afraid of what's going to happen in my gut if I do something I'm not supposed to do. Because my gut just churns. Just churns. So I just kept going, did the steps, made amends to my parents. I had found out, my mother told me I was adopted when I was 7 years old, and I was broken off from my family, from my biological family, and I was never the same after that. I really believe I drank at the brokenheartedness of my mother giving me away. And one day, at about 8 years sober, I was sitting in my living room watching one of the Christian stations, and they had a home for unwed mothers on there, and the girls were giving their story about how they were going in there, having their babies, and giving their babies to these beautiful Christian homes. And there I was in the living room, and I saw this girl say, I am almost 9 months sober. My name is Mary Ann. I am almost 9 months sober, and I have to give my baby away because I want the best for my baby. I want my baby to have a home with two loving parents, and I cannot take care of my baby because I have no husband. And when she said that, I looked at the screen. I said, that is my mother. That is my mother. And I got on the other side and felt her pain. I felt her pain. And I got down on my knees in front of the television. I said, God and Mother, forgive me all the resentment I have ever felt for you. Please forgive me. I am so sorry. I love you. And I got totally delivered from that pain that I have felt all my life. And I sent money to the home for the girls because I had two abortions. And I had killed two of my own children. So what I did is I sent the money to the home to help the girls go through the school and to put the children up for adoption there. They sent back two little booties on a little plaque that said, thank you for saving my life. And I fell to the ground and wept. I had made amends to my mother and amends for the abortions I had had. I was cleansed. And I told my sponsor, my gosh. She said, Whitney, it never ends. The blessings never end. Just keep going. Don't drink, don't use, and go to a meeting. So, those are some of the things that happened to me. And I got called back in. But then 15 years sober, I wrote my book. And I cried on every page. I got a publisher right away. The publisher wanted to know all about what happened in Star Trek, what happened in my career, how did I become a drunk, how could somebody that got way up there come all the way down there? How could that happen? I said, I'll tell you. So I read it. I wrote it. It took me 3 years to write it. I cried all the way through the book. I had a catharsis, a complete fifth-step cleansing. I let it all out. You're as sick as your secrets, you know. And I let it all out. And when the book came out, I was so scared. Again, that fear, that terrible fear. Self-centered fear, they're going to hate me. They're not going to like me anymore. I'm going to lose everything. I shouldn't have done this. Blah, 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 blah. So I went through with it anyway. I had a lot of help with my sponsors. I had a big gal who died from Friendly House. I got another sponsor in Pacific Group. And then I started going to the Pacific Group. And then I came up here. And that's when I wrote the book. And my coming up here was for my grandchildren and my kids. They live in Madeira, and my son is the one who is now clean, sober, saved, all, everything. He's just got everything going for him. And he loves God so bad. He's teaching at Tehipity. He feels he's got a mission. He feels that he's a male science teacher, that he can carry this love and joy to these kids. It's a miracle. A total miracle that he can go into a ghetto school and be of service, you know, and love these children. He loves these kids. And so I'm with him, and I came up here, wrote the book got published. The first year the book got published, 1998, I went to 40 conventions in 1 year. 40 Star Trek conventions and sold the book after book after book after book after book. People started coming to me saying, I got 3 months sober. I got a month sober. I got 2 months sober. I stopped drinking. I stopped using. I stopped... You did? Great. I mean, I started hearing it from everybody. Isn't that a miracle? It's just so now it's in the recovery houses, the books in the jail. The book is, I've done 13 television shows on the book about it. I did Entertainment Tonight. They came up to my house and they wanted to know, what did I have that I could tell them? How could the rest of the people in the world get this thing that you have, Whitney? What is this thing that you have? What is the thing that we have? We have sobriety. We have joy. We have love. We have God. And, you know, I just preached it. I just put it out there. And it kept coming up. I did the Maury Povich show in New York. I took two of my babies with me. One of my babies was 6 years sober. She was a Playboy bunny. She was gorgeous. And she took her boss to the airport one day in his Porsche with the top down, looking good. And... about 10 guys rammed her car. She got out to look and see what had happened. They abducted her. They kept her for about 6 days and ran her through everything. Now, she was 6 years sober. She said all she did was say the Lord's Prayer as one after one came on her. And then they shot her twice with no clothes and dumped her in Watts. And I was so mad. I was so mad. Where were you? Were you sleeping? What were you doing? This girl was in the hospital. She was going to die. I was obsessed with hate. And I'd go to work every day. I was working as a receptionist in an office in L.A. And I'd go in the office. My boss was in the program. And she came over to me one day and she said, you're miserable, aren't you? I said, yeah, I can't. Get over this. I can't get over it. She said, she wrote on a piece of paper, if you can't forgive the sin, you must forgive the sinner. Oh, what an order. She said, you have to do it or you're going to be in pain. So I was in so much pain, again, bottomed out. I had to go right to the bottom. I went home, got down on my knees, and I looked up to the heavens. I said, okay. I forgive those men. I wish them joy, love, peace, sobriety. Now, you know, God, I don't mean this, but I'm doing it anyway. Please forgive them. Bang. It was gone. The resentment was gone. Where did it go? Wow. What an awesome God we serve. Wow. I never had another bit of pain. This girl went to court and put two of these guys that were the ringleaders, they did it to a lot of women, put two of these guys away. And she's okay today. You know, she didn't relapse. She did not relapse. She's now, I'm 22, she must be 20. And she did not relapse. She went through that, and I got through that, through the steps of the program. I must forgive, no matter how hard it is. So that's the ninth step for me. It's before I do, step 8.5 is forgiveness. I work with a lot of abused women, and they cannot forgive. I said, that's step 8.5, honey. You write down the list, and step 8.5 is you must forgive your perpetrator. You must. Because you can't get, until you can get beyond that, you have to forgive. So I forgave. I did my ninth step. I did it on the knees of my mother, who was in a nursing home. She died, went home to be with her maker, and I made amends to her. I took care of her. I buried her. I'm her only child, remember? And God has been with me through all of that. And I made amends to my dad. I sat outside the veterans. I love it when I come here. Hi, Daddy. My dad died in a veterans hospital. He was a World War I veteran. He died in a veterans hospital in L.A. He had he was on a respirator, you know, where they can't move. They had him tied down because he kept trying to pull it out. He didn't want that thing in his throat. It was horrendous for me to see that. I was in self-pity. This was before I got sober. I was in self-pity. I was outside smoking a joint because I couldn't face it. And my mother came to me and she said, if you don't go up there and say goodbye, you're going to regret it. And I didn't go. I didn't go. And in my sobriety, I had to make an amend to my dad. Now, how am I going to do that? He said. And they said, you will write him a love letter. You will take your own inventory and a love letter and write it to your dad. And you can go over on his grave and you can read it to him. And then see what happens. I did it. I went over to the grave at, I can't think of the beautiful, Forest Lawn. And my mother was already there and my dad was there and I laid down on a right sat right on the hump of the ground and I brought my inventory out and I read it to him and I cried and I emptied my heart and asked for his forgiveness because he adopted me. He had no idea what he was getting. I was a very tough kid to raise. 3 days later, I went home. I brought this because I wanted to read this to you. 3 days later, I got a letter in the mail. I want to read it. Dear Grace, I want you to think of this money as a gift from your father. It comes from my own estate, but I'm giving it to you in the name of your father, Gordon Whitney. I know he loved you dearly, and he was always proud of you. Please divide this money as follows. Give $1,000 to your son, Scott, $1,000 to your son, Jonathan, and keep $1,000 for yourself. With love, Clinton Whitney. That came 3 days after I made the amends to my dad on his grave. Now, is that wonderful or what? I felt it was a gift from my dad, and I looked up and I said, boy, Dad, you know how to get my attention. Just send me money. Anyway, that's just some of the miracles that have happened for me, and I've gone back to work. I do a lot of conventions. I speak wherever I'm asked. I live up in the hills. I have a little ranch up there, and I'm very happy up there. I'm coming up on 23. I have great meetings. I have great friends. I don't know what I would ever do without Alcoholics Anonymous. I would never want to live without Alcoholics Anonymous. You have given me everything, life on life terms, and you've given me a way to live and faith life without drinking and using. And I love God with all my heart, and he has brought me to you and you to me. Thank you for listening. Thank you. Bye-bye.